Thank you, Sally. And we'll have time for questions and answers after all of the speakers are done. Our next speaker also may be well known to you. Eloise Anderson joined the Claremont Institute as the Institute's director of our new program for the American Family. She really became a national figure while leading Governor Tommy Thompson's welfare reform project in Wisconsin from 1988 to 1992. Many people will credit Tommy Thompson for some great changes in welfare, and Eloise Anderson was the person who was the architect of those changes. One of the better things Pete Wilson did in 1992 was ask Eloise to come to California to be director of welfare for the state of California, which she did for 6 years. She has been profiled on 60 Minutes. Some of you may have seen that amazing interview with Leslie Stahl, where Leslie, I think, was shocked to find the moral strength and integrity in this person. She has done battle with welfare bureaucrats for many, many years, so she knows all of their tricks and has been a very effective administrator. George W. Bush has named her as one of six co-chair for his election effort, although I hasten to add that's in her personal capacity as a citizen. She even received the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. Now, I don't know of any national conservative figure who has gotten the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, but Eloise Anderson has even achieved that. So could you welcome her to the podium, Eloise Anderson.
Good afternoon. When Sally was talking about the lights, I said, we can determine whether or not we have enough lights by whether or not you can see me. If I fade, then we don't have enough light. When I was thinking about how to talk to you this afternoon about the critical issues in California, lots of things crossed my mind, and actually this is the first time in a long time, actually probably the first time ever, I've actually had a chance to think about social policy and not try to push it along. Thanks to the Claremont, I'm actually allowed to think for a change, which is actually a new kind of thought, and only have to manage myself, which I called my old secretary and gave her my blessings for having managed me so well, and asked her would she teach me how to do it, because I was having a hard time at it. But as I was thinking about these social issues, because I don't really talk about social issues in California and the cutting ones, I went back to 1964, and which is when I actually started my career, so I'm not a 60s kid, I'm actually a 50s kid. And I thought about the Real Great Society and Lyndon Johnson, all the kinds of things that we think about him now. But one of the things that was our thought in those days was what he was trying to put forward, which there's probably a lot of disagreement about, was to provide an opportunity, which is very different than what I think has happened over the years. So one of the things that I thought about was what happened? What was it that changed our poor policy in this country? And one of the things that I think happened, and I'm still trying to figure out when exactly this occurred, is that we moved to a belief in unconditional entitlement of income. Now, that would drive my grandfather and father completely nuts, because they never believed that you could get something for nothing. But somewhere in particularly our country, and particularly in California, as I've watched the legislature, there is a belief that you can get something for nothing. So the notion of income without work. The next thing that I think changed in this country that I think we had to be particularly concerned about is that we joined together two things that had not been joined together before, was the causes of poverty and the consequences of poverty became the same. And that's a new phenomenon in American thinking. The third thing that I think we did, and this really kind of surprised me, is that we changed the definition of poor. It used to be that it was fine to be poor, because poor didn't necessarily mean you were impoverished. So now poor and impoverished are joined. Having grown up poor, I never understood that I was deprived. And many people in this room probably grew up poor and never knew that they were considered deprived. The other thing that we did in this time period was we redefined the word dignity. And this is a big issue, particularly for me, because we moved dignity and we decided that dignity was freedom from hardship. You know, we don't like risk taking anymore. We think there's no risk in this country. And the other one is dignity was freedom from stigma. So these issues to me were somewhat interesting in how we began to develop social policy and how it had changed from 1964. So to me, liberalism, what goes on to me mostly in the Democratic Party, changed from 1964 of Lyndon Johnson to what we have now. I can't exactly date it, but I know it's changed. Now, a couple of things that happened that I think Nixon gets blamed for, but I don't really think it's his fault. And that's the whole notion of a guaranteed income. A lot of people think we got rid of that notion. I would tell you that it's alive and well, and maybe more alive and well in California than anyplace else. One of the places that guaranteed income happened first was with the SSI program, Social Security, a supplement program that we have. And what it did was to take age, blind, and disability, which had been state programs, and remove them from the states and took them to the federal government to fund, all except in California. In California, not only do we have the federal government funds that, but we also have what we call an SSP program that supplements that even, which I think is very interesting. What I always thought was very interesting is that is my, when I was director of social services, that was the largest welfare program I had, not the AFDC program. The other one, which I don't think we paid much attention to because we kind of like it, is the Earned Income Tax Credit program, which basically says that we're, even though we haven't paid much attention to this, are really willing to put a guaranteed income level under you. We say if you work, but I suspect that we're moving in a larger direction than just if you work. Because a lot of other states besides the federal government, actually there are 20 states that have the Earned Income Tax program now, as well as the federal government Earned Income Tax program. So as I look at those issues that I think have changed who we are or the thinking around social policy over the past 30 years, and these two particular programs that I have much concern about, I want to talk to you about five issues that I think are important. One, welfare reform, SSP program in California, the elderly, the feminization of the society, and black employment in government, which I think all have certain things to say to you. Welfare reform. Most people believe that California has had welfare reform. I think what we had was a mask to make people believe that we had welfare reform in California. We had the largest caseload in the nation. We still have the largest caseload in the nation, even though we had the largest drop of caseload in the nation, but one of the smallest percentage points of the drop in the caseload. So as we look at welfare reform in California, what I would tell you is that it is impossible to reform California's welfare reform from where we are. Why would you think I would say that? One is that our welfare reform program is now a guaranteed income for children in the state. How did we get to that? One is if you are on AFDC or TANF, which is now caught in the state of California, and you do not abide by the rules, you get kicked off, but your children remain. So, in reality, there is a base income in California for all families. Second, California is not a work-first approach. 40 to 50% of the caseload in California is located in Los Angeles County. There are about 20 counties of the 58 in California that have a work-first approach. LA is not one of them. Work-first approach says, instead of giving you a check and put you on welfare, we put you to work first. In L.A., that is not what occurs. L.A. also has a larger welfare population than the state of New York. That ought to drive us crazy over time. The lack of real time limits. I just said to you that after 2 years, you go off, but your children stay on. If you don't abide by the rules, you go off, children stay on. You going off amounts to about $100 a month in terms of loss of income. Sanction system, there is really no penalties. What the legislature put in place, which is what I call please, please try again system. Or maybe it's called really feel your pain system. The thing that's most important, I think, here is the disconnect between the leadership and where the citizens of California think they thought welfare was going. What has been interesting to me, because I think administration and management is one of my stronger skills, is that change in an organization usually cannot occur with people who've been involved in the maintenance of the old organization. In California, 90% of the directors of social services at the county level are exactly the same directors who are directing the old program. So if you're asking industry, which we usually do, and we ask industry to make changes, what they tend to do is change the leadership and management of the organization. In government, we have not done that. We have not changed the leadership and management of the organization, nor did we change the policies, the underlying policies on which the new program is built on. In Wisconsin, one of the things that we did, which I thought was very interesting, which I spent most of my time doing, was changing the infrastructure so new policy could come in and eliminating the old law. California built its new law on the old law. So change is very difficult within this system under the reform programs that are here. Now, my view is the reason why the legislature did not move to make that change is because the legislature knew over time, Democratic legislature knew over time, that they could slowly move us back towards the old system, which is what direction they're headed for. Welfare reform, I believe, or welfare tinkering with, I'm not sure what to call it, in California is alive and well in terms of the old system overcoming the new policies. SSP, Social Security, which is the next one, which I've always been marveled at. When I came to California, this was a totally unexpected program. It is not a program that I had ever seen before. So to look at this program gave me quite a lot of concern. And when I go through what's here, it should begin to give you some concerns. In California, we have a little over a million people on SSP. Now, which is interesting, the caseload for AFDC, which is the one everybody hollers about, in the time I've been here, has never been over 922,000. The grants for the supplemental program are higher than the grants for the families with children. Plus this is a supplement to another program, which I always thought was very interesting. Now, when I start to tell you who's on this program, you will begin to see my concern. 63% of the SSCP population are citizens of the United States. 31% are non-citizens. And then we have 6% that we don't know who they are. And my thought that since we don't know who they are, they're probably neither non-citizens or citizens, and I haven't quite figured out what that category is, but I believe we might call them illegals. Now, what is interesting about the non-citizen category is that 25% of them, this is particularly, have been on the program less than 5 years. Nineteen percent of them have been on the program 20 years or more. Now, what is also interesting to me about this group is that we tend to think, well, it's okay because they've worked here, right? They've contributed. Well, that's not necessarily what the data says. What the data says is citizens 65 years or older who've been on this program, 45% of them have ever worked in this country. All citizens, whole category of all citizens, 87% of all citizens worked. But when you break that down between citizens who were born here and citizens who have been neutralized, 75% of those who weren't born. So these people haven't contributed. Then if you take the all citizen category again, we got 77% of them who worked. Break it down between those who were born and not. 78% of citizens have worked compared to 72 of those not born. Okay, so what are the people's status? 69% of the non-citizens are permanent residents. 19% are refugees, and 15% are the people who got amnesty under IRCA. Now, the question I ask, not being in California, is why aren't they citizens? They've been here long enough to be citizens. What is the problem here? So the next question I ask is, well, okay, who are these people? 29% are Mexican. I can't call them Americans because they're not Americans yet. 19% come from a variety of other countries with lots of little numbers in those. 9% are Vietnamese, 9% are Filipinos, 8% are Chinese, and 6% are Russian. Now, where do they live? They're down here. Actually, they're below the Tehachapis. 43% in LA, 16% surrounding LA, 59% in Southern California. The rest, the largest number group, are in the Bay Area. Now, what I always thought was interesting is that I always thought that the Central Valley, the farmers, you know, really needed all this, these people. No, 9%. The question that I think one has to ask, and I've asked this ever since I've been in California, is what is the benefit of being a citizen? What do we get for being a citizen? Now, I was told when I came out here that the benefit we get is to be able to vote. And then I went into a voting booth, and the person who was before me was speaking a language I never had heard of before. And I had always thought in order to vote, one had to speak English. One, to become a citizen, one had to speak English. So, because I wasn't willing to ask, I mean, I was a little chicken on that one. The thought was, gee, in California, they even vote when they're not citizens. So then the question really became, what is the meaning of citizenship in this country? It seems to me that in California, that question had better be asked soon. And when I look at the demographics across the nation, it had better be a conversation that we're having nationwide. The elderly. This one probably gives me the most concern because I think it, for California, looms the biggest battle. Between 1990 and 2000, the demographics in this state are changing dramatically. And one of the things that is happening is the elderly population is really doing some very interesting things. Between 1990 and 2020, which means I might be around to see this, the elderly population in California will double itself. It will move from a little over 3 million to almost 6.5 million in population. What is striking about this is that a majority of this elderly, as we move
to 20 will be white, but the majority of the population of this state will not be. And so we will have in 2020, if the projections work out, to have a white population of less than 40%, somewhere projected around 35 to 38%, and an elderly population, within that elderly population, about 60% of that elderly population being white. That is a phenomenon that I believe, looking at what I call the culture of diversity in this country, is going to be the biggest fight over what's going to happen with social policy in the state that we've ever seen. Now, I say to my friends in Sacramento, are you ready for that discussion? And when I look at who is becoming the dominant force in the legislature, I suggest that California is totally unprepared for that discussion. The income transfer program policy will be a very interesting discussion. Feminization of the society. This one probably scares me a little bit because I have a slightly interesting background around military issues. I don't believe we live in a friendly world, and I don't necessarily believe that women understand the whole notion of defense for the same reasons why men understand it. And when I look at what's happening to the boys in this country, I am really struck by what's happening to boys in this country. But I want to talk about single mothers and how I see that, and then boys and men and how I see that. 68%, maybe growing, coming up or down a little bit, of black children in this country are without fathers. Whites are marching right along, right behind it. They're at about 40% without fathers. So single mothers are a very important group to look at. Single mothers, these are national figures. California hits very close to these national figures. The single mother is average age 30 years of age. It is not a teenager. It's the first thing we have to come to grips with. 38% of them are of color. 11% in California, this is a little higher. 11% of them nationally are Hispanic. 23% of them have not graduated from high school. This is an important piece about what we know about children and their educational attainment. It's very tied to mothers. 25% have had some college, 6% BAs, 2% MAs. 51% across the nation, and California is pretty close, of women who are single mothers have been married. So we're talking about a divorced population. 5% widowed. 15% of single mothers, this tends to be the younger single mothers, live with their family. 13%. This is probably the one that's the numbers that are growing the most, that I think for our girl children particularly we should have the most concern about. 13% of these single mothers are cohabitating with men who are not related to the children in their households. Average two children. 70% of single mothers have children under 6 years of age. 28% of single mothers are on aid. In California, 52% of the women on aid were married. And 85% of the women on aid in California have children under the age of six. Boys. Boys in our country right now are going through some incredible things. They are graduating less than girls for the first time in the history of our country. They are more abused. They are more neglected. They're becoming more delinquent. They are taking more legal drugs like Ritalin than any other group in the world. They use more illegal drugs than any other group in the world. Boys in the United States are in trouble. Now, what I think is happening here around boys is that boys and girls are in homes without men and fathers. Boys are very, very different than girls. Now, I guess you say, Eloise, that's obvious. But it doesn't seem to be obvious to the social, I'm kind of the elites, about our boys. We are wired differently, and our plumbing is differently. And those connect in very special ways for boys in early stages. So what I see us doing is our cultural and social and parental responses to boys have become totally feminized. Men in our society are no longer engaged with their children. The implications of that, I think, are devastating to this country. Women and the feminization of the society is happening around our boys and is happening around our social policy. My last one is an issue that I think is very interesting and is probably the one in which I think in California we can do something about. It's the connection between working for government and expansion of government. And there seems to be two groups in California that are very tied to employment and government. Over 20% of those blacks who work for a government operation. It is not just in California that that is a fact, it is a fact in 20 states. We must find some way to remove blacks from employment and government to the private sector. As long as they are in government, that is a controlling thinking that they have around the need to expand government. And finally, what I think needs to occur for California is privatization of welfare, full family sanctions, more faith-based opportunities for welfare, the elimination and a discussion around guaranteed income. Should it be government's responsibility to guarantee a person's basic income? What is it that we want to do with our elderly? And this comes down to several programs, Medicare, income supportive services, nursing homes. All these support the elderly, and how are we going to deal with those in the future? And the last one, which I think is more important, is the notion of keeping men in families, and how do we want to go about doing that? Thank you.